Dude, I get mad when I get a business associate due diligence survey. Like, it's going to take me 2 hours. Man, 6.5 years, I'd freak out.
You're listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindel and David Sims. Relax, HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs and Security First IT. And joining me is Donna Grindel of Cardin. What's up, Donna?
Well, this and that. You know, this and that. So right around.
We both spent 2 days in a NIST conference webcast. I'm burnt out. I don't know about you, but even not being there, I'm still burnt out.
Well, you know, I was at the pediatric practice administrators. I spoke, and then I hung around because I wanted to hear a couple of the other sessions. David sending me texts. Are you done yet? So you're watching what I'm watching. And
I know, I'm making comments, and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, this is no fun.
So then we watched it all day today, and I was not in charge of making sure we got information. Krista's in charge of getting information, but
yeah, there was some good stuff, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, so I don't want to give anything away, but
we'll do a review of all the notes. There was a couple of things you told me about from yesterday. They were very interesting, and
yeah,
I was in and out because, you know, it's me, but I think our review is going to have some really cool stuff in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will.
Well, you know, they started out talking about this thing, or one of the things that they talked about, what we're covering today.
What we're covering today. Yeah. Well, before we do that, we already have stuff booked for 2019.
I know.
Well, you do. We hadn't booked the boot camp yet. Maybe in the next couple of episodes, we'll announce that. But you have something coming up in April. So what you got?
Yeah, the guys that were the JAWS Society last year, I went out to California with. Exciting that they are now coming to Savannah. So makes it a no-brainer to have me come back down there. And so we're doing several different things with them. And now they're calling themselves the Society of OMS Administrators, which is not as fun as JAWS. But it worked when we were by the ocean to use JAWS, that's for sure. So I'm looking forward to hanging out with those folks again, because they were a hoot to hang out with. So I'm going there. Their conference is the 7th through the 10th in Savannah, April 7th through the 10th. So I'm looking forward to that and having other discussions about 2019 and things to do, because, you know, might as well load them up, move them out.
Yeah.
So that leads us into the discussions we are having, trying to determine our next boot camp, because we're actually getting some pressure about picking dates and having a plan before the beginning of the year so that it can be in budgets and such. So we are under pressure. We hear you people. We will have a date.
Yeah. We're going to have to end up planning these things like a year in advance.
That's so hard for us.
That is not how we roll.
Can you not tell we're spontaneity people?
Hey, you want to do one this week? That sounds good.
All right, that sounds good. You want a card right now? All right, let's do that.
So we'll figure it out. But
yes.
All right, so if you like today's episode, which I'm sure you will, be sure to share it out on your favorite social media. Or you can pay for, you know, advertising on a radio station or TV. However you want to share it, doesn't matter. We'll take it all. But today we're going to talk about what Roger Severino has categorized as a BJE, a big, juicy, egregious data breach.
I do want to do a shout out to Marie Turnbull. Hope I'm saying it properly, on LinkedIn. She posted today that it's Friday, which means she's listening to Help Me With HIPAA.
Awesome.
Rock. Thank you for sharing this out, like David asks every week.
Yep.
And we will definitely appreciate anybody else that does it.
So, all right. There you go. Well, for doing that, what you get is the next month of podcasts for free. So just stay on the line and we'll get your name and information. Make sure that that happens.
And he's off. So someday we'll have to give away t-shirts or something. You know, it'll cost us three times.
Well, if we would have had some last boot camp,
for the podcast. We had some last boot camp. What? Yeah,
if we would have had some the last boot camp, I wouldn't have had to, you know, run around looking for shirts at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Look, I got you with a shirt and Krista with a laptop. I'll be good to go on boot camp Thursday. So that's right, Krista. I told you I would bring it up that you left your laptop at home when we went to a client site for 3 days.
Ooh, Krista.
I'm just saying. She was pointing out yesterday I hadn't brought it up. So now we've done. Now let's talk about Anthem.
All right, Anthem. So historic stuff here. What? Oh, no. I mean, you know, what was the thing he said? The largest breach deserves the largest fine.
Yeah.
Bam.
The largest healthcare breach in history merits the largest healthcare settlement in history. And a lot of people think they didn't go far enough.
Yeah, I know. I've heard a lot of that. You know, during this news conference, they were like, what? $16 million is nowhere near enough.
Yeah, there's a lot that say that, but, you know, there's room for them to go further if things don't line up the way that they have told Anthem they should. So, but let's do a little bit of history because this breach actually happened right around the time of the infancy of the podcast. And we were still trying to figure out what we were doing. So we didn't cover this in detail then, but just the little historic thing. It is important to note that this is a settlement with a business associate, not a covered entity. The affiliated covered entity, the ACE, that Anthem does for all their different payer organizations, outsources management of their claims to a business associate that they also is a subsidiary named Anthem. So it's that complexity of you better know who's your business associate and who's your covered entities.
Right.
It does matter. But so this is actually a huge settlement, a historic settlement, and it's with a business associate. Note to self.
Did you get caught up in that? Because I did.
I don't remember it if I did, but you know.
I did.
How many letters can you get? Did you?
I'm still suffering.
Did you apply for some of the settlement money?
Not yet, but now that I know there's so much out there, I might.
Yeah. All right. Well, here we go. So it actually goes back to February 18th, 2014, which is when you and I were just hanging out. And
it's pretty HIPAA.
I don't know.
Some people don't know HIPAA has actually been around a while.
I know, really? Yeah, 2003 to 2005. So anyway, a subsidiary, as they pointed out, of Anthem, the payer. So we're just going to use the general term Anthem means everything. But they opened a phishing email. Yeah, a phishing email.
$16 million phishing email.
No, it's way more than that when we get done telling this story. But, you know, we talk about phishing and we talk about the importance of phishing testing. It's one of the best deterrents and best training tools out there. That's why we do our Cardin phishing trip, which is utilizing those tools and you know, it makes it a surprise and we do some cool stuff with it. But it actually improves the awareness of what these things are. We didn't do as much of that back in 2014. I guarantee you, Anthem is a big fan of phishing testing now. But they clicked on it, and it launched some malware that essentially gave them a little foothold. You know, it got their toe in the door. And then, you know what happens.
It spreads, propagate.
That computer told two computers, and those computers told two computers, and those computers. Yeah, they were moving laterally and, you know, all over the network eventually. They were in there for some time, moving around the network, which is, you know, normal standard protocol for hackers. You know, they find a way in, then they like, oh, I wonder where I am. You know, they just kind of throw out a bunch of those. You ever go to those arenas where they throw out the little toys that come floating down in the parachutes, you know? That's what it's like. They just fling them all out and they don't know where they're going to land. And they're like, ooh, where did I end up? Oh, this is handsome. I ended up right here in the middle of something big.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they did manage to eventually work their way to the what they have termed repeatedly as the Anthem Data Warehouse System. So it must have been like the crown jewels, so to speak.
Yeah.
I don't know what else it could have been. You know, I mean, they found their way into the heart of the nuclear reactor. So they were able to get in there and they removed 78.8 million unique user records. So it was more than that, but only 78.8 million unique users. Or I guess, well, it's patients, it's whatever. People.
Data points.
Yeah, there you go. But the forensics report said that 50 accounts, so 50 user accounts within the Anthem's network, and at least 90 systems within the enterprise environment were involved in this attack, that they managed to get in, run queries, exfiltrate information, boom. But get this, that exfiltration didn't take place until December 2014.
Huh.
So they were in there messing around starting in February. Yeah, I don't know what else happened. We're not hearing a lot of this because one of the things that's important to note here is that they feel fairly confident that it was a nation state attack, meaning a foreign government did this attack.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot of information they could have been going for in there. I don't know. So there's a lot of the detail we will probably never hear about.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, well, you know, national security, you know, people don't get it that healthcare could be part of a national security issue. And it's about time they start to get that. But first it happened, they discovered, at least, that it happened in January 2015. So January 27th, 2015, apparently that's when they went, what the what? And there's some varying dates in here. So there's a detailed report that came out because after this happened, you've got all the insurance commissioners because this is a payer. So they have some additional things to worry about as far as state by state rules and requirements. So the entire, basically, I think every state in the union had somebody. And they all went together and said, look, we're going to do one joint investigation. We're going to evaluate the whole system, see what happened, blah, 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 decide what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were a whole lot nicer about this. Their joint investigation said, you know, basically, they immediately activated their incident response plan. They were able to stop the intruder activity. They think the response plan worked well. I don't know. Report basically said, look, you had problems that let people in, but then you fixed them. So we're not so mad. But the insurance commissioner's joint investigation said that while the pre-breach deficiencies impacted Anthem's ability to reduce the likelihood, hello, risk management, the likelihood of and quickly detect, because they didn't know, the data breach, the controls implemented subsequent to the data breach should improve their ability to detect future breaches and enable Anthem to respond more effectively to a future attack than was the case in this instance. So basically, you've told us you screwed up and you feel bad about it and you're going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what it sounds like to me. I don't know about you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're full of it today, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. I'm just taking it all in. This big, juicy, egregious thing.
I know. So the states all said, look, you know, bless your little pee-picking hearts. You know, you've got the other government coming after you. And they just detailed all of this stuff that was being spent and basically let them off the hook because they detailed that at that point, at the time of the settlement, which was December 2016, according to the report, Anthem had already spent $2.5 million to engage expert consultants And I would have been fine with just 500,000 of that. I wouldn't have touched that one with a 10-foot pole. 115 million for the implementation of security improvements.
Ooh.
31 million to provide the initial notification to the public and affected individuals. So 31 million for notifications and 112 million for the credit protection to the breach impacted consumers.
That's not bad though for the breach notification costs.
I know. So they got a deal somehow.
Yeah.
But I guess when you're sending out 80 million things, the cost goes way down.
Apparently, because I was thinking, you know, just the breach notification cost alone would be, you know, well over 100 million. It's not 31.
One would think, yeah. At least according to these numbers. So I don't know how it costs them less than a dollar to let people know. But maybe, I don't know. Anyway.
Because everybody knew. They didn't need to.
That's me too.
If you're watching the news, you know.
So that's a total of 260.5 million they had spent, according to that report at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthem was committing to the insurance commissioners that they were going to pay for credit monitoring and upgrades to their security tools. They did a special one for minors. So they're like, okay, well, we're good with that. But, you know, the lack of details about how the malware infected things and what it did, I understand why they're not giving it to us, but I wish, but you can't share a lot of this stuff. And that's one of the problems in cybersecurity itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is, you know, how much do you share? So now we fast forward through a bunch of investigations, all the legal maneuvers, all the lawyers talking to the lawyers about the lawyers and the civil lawsuit was going on as well. And those things start getting settled down. So August of this year, mm-hmm. the settlement was one of the largest settlements in a consumer data breach case in history. It was up there. I think there may have been some more. I think we'll see some more with Equifax or something. But the total of $115 million covering 19.1 million of the 79 million patients that were breached or the individuals that were breached. So 115 million we add in. So that gets us to $375.5 million before the OCR started looking around. And I'm not sure what's the deal with the other 60 million people that weren't in the 19.1 million.
Yeah. That is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Cause you know, once the lawyers took their bite out of that and you divide it by 19.1, I don't know what anybody ended up with, but certainly not enough to cover if they had actually had their information stolen and it was actively being used.
I have not seen a check in the mail.
You had to sign up for the lawsuit, boo.
probably didn't do that either.
Probably not. Okay, so now we get down. So that's the history all the way up to August, and they've spent $375.5 million. So supposedly OCR took that into account. And this settlement, you know, it adds a few other details into the mix, but it still doesn't give us any specifics on the malware or any of that. I just think national security is going to prevent us from getting much more of that. I'm mm-hmm. still interested in all scripts. But the OCR announcement does mention that they are aware the attack goes back into February, but the exfiltration, which to OCR, that's when the improper disclosures they are certain happened.
Right.
That was between December and January. And this is where we have the quote from Director Severino or your buddy Roger.
Call me Raj. We'll put you on a podcast.
Because I know that's your life's goal, is to be on our little podcast.
I'm either going to get him or the Dark Overlord. One of them's got to come on the podcast.
Oh, God. Don't, really?
Maybe I get them on together.
All right. Anyway, so his quote, it started with, as we said earlier, the largest health data breach in U.S. history fully merits the largest HIPAA settlement in history. Unfortunately, Anthem failed to implement appropriate measures for detecting hackers who had gained access to their system to harvest passwords and steal people's private information. We know that large healthcare entities are attractive targets for hackers. which is why they are expected to have strong password policies and to monitor and respond to security incidents in a timely fashion or risk, meaning, or they risk enforcement by OCR.
Bam.
Yeah. Slam, lam, and ding dong.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they were like, look, we acknowledge that this was bad. It was really bad. And they, you know, had their $16 million settlement, but it also included a two-year corrective action plan. So when we add all that together, so it started February 18th, 2014. That's a phishing attack. Then all the way to October 2018. So we're well over, you know, 4.5 years before we get that settlement. We've tried to tell people how long these things go on.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not fun to just hang out and wait for the next time you hear from them. And then the extended end of the agreed cap, so that's 2020, October 2020, because it says it starts on the day of the settlement. So we're looking at 6.5 years they dealt with from beginning to the end of their cap, and who knows what else has been built in on some of that stuff.
6.5 years. And you know they have to dedicate resources to this for 6.5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not something that you just, you know, oh, well, you know, I'll spend an hour a week on it, which is what we suggest people do with HIPAA.
Dude, I get mad when I get a business associate due diligence survey. Like, it's going to take me 2 hours. Man, 6.5 years, I freak out.
Well, and those cap things are the hardest part.
So,
they did list, here were the things that, you know, unlike the insurance guys who went, gosh darn it, you worked really hard, but you failed. OCR said, no, 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 you did not. Worked that hard because you did not conduct an accurate and thorough risk analysis.
Ooh, how many times have we heard that one?
Never, never. Never heard a settlement without one, that is. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Yeah. Well, it's like the lady said today that, you know, why are we still seeing people without business associate agreements?
I don't understand. You know, well, HIPAA schmippa, that's why.
It's made easy.
It's so easy. I don't have to do any of that. I don't have to do any of that evaluation. I can become fully compliant just by signing up for a service.
Yeah, because it said it was HIPAA compliant.
Yeah. So they also failed on their requirement to implement sufficient procedures to regularly review records of information system activity, i.e., you didn't look for things that could have made you realize the hackers were in there.
Yep. Nobody's looking. How many times we talk about that?
I know. If you ain't looking, something's cooking.
Yeah.
The requirement to identify and respond to detections of the security incident leading to the breach, which I found interesting because this kind of applies, you know, or implies rather, that they didn't actually respond to it. Like, you know, because the other folks said, well, they responded really well. But this is saying they identify and respond to detection. So maybe it's the lack of identify. I don't know. But they're saying they failed to do that effectively.
So maybe they're saying that the warning signs were there, but there again, nobody identified it.
All systems are flashing red and nobody's looking.
pull up.
Then they said the requirement to implement sufficient technical policies and procedures for electronic information systems that maintain electronic PHI to allow access only to those persons or software programs that have been granted access.
Least privilege.
That was interesting. Well, but they also brought in software programs.
Yeah.
You know, you're supposed to, people will let these other programs in and not worry about what access they're granting to these things. So maybe that's one of the ways they got in. That's all I'm saying.
Possibly. I mean, that's a bad habit of people who have phones, well, especially Android phones. You know, you go, you install an app and it's like, I need to be able to do everything on your phone. You're like, wait a minute, I installed this game. Why does it need to access my contacts and my webcam or whatever? I'm just like, this doesn't make any sense.
That's exactly it. And people do that on their computers like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you ask them, well, what if I just pop up this little thing that makes you decide? You know, we're just going to say, okay.
Yeah, just keep clicking next.
Yeah, until I get to where I want to be. Then the requirement to prevent unauthorized access, they also said, to the 78.8 million individuals. So those are all the things that they identified that they did incorrectly. That were their failures. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, nothing new, you know. But it is three times the largest, like the largest settlement before was 5.5 million. So this is like right at three times, you know, so they made a big jump. Mm-hmm. And note to self, it will fund more investigations because that's what they get to do with the money. It doesn't go back into the general fund. It goes back to them, which is another reason you won't see this stuff go away because it pays for itself every time they get money out of somebody.
Which still begs the question of why so small a settlement.
Right. And they're saying they didn't go after more money because of the amounts they already paid. So when you add this $16 million in, it basically gets them up to $400 million that they've paid. But that's been over 4 years.
Right. You know?
But, well, yeah, I mean, the $115 million civil lawsuit and then $16 million. So that was in the last few months. But does that really make a difference to these guys?
No. No, we're talking about, you know, multi-billion dollar.
I bet you the CEO makes more money than that.
Yeah, you're probably right, honestly.
I know.
I mean, I don't know firsthand, but I've read and heard about some of the profits they make. And I mean, just $16 million is not a drop in the bucket for them. It is not much.
They just stroke a check.
So
I'd have a heart attack just stroking a single $16,000 check if I was in trouble for real. You know, I can't handle being in trouble like that.
I do wonder, too. I mean, even Roger made a...
Your buddy.
Roger. What's up, Raj? I mean, even he makes comments about, you know, we're here to help. We're here to, you know, make sure that you find the problems and provide technical assistance to fix it and all that. So I'm just wondering if maybe they were like, yes, all this is bad, but you are doing an awful lot to try to improve things, which is ultimately what we want to happen. And yeah, so maybe that's, I don't know.
Well, they committed to doing a lot of stuff when the insurance commissioners were reviewing it. So they've thrown a ton of money at the security and trying to stop further incidents. Cause can you imagine if they had another one of those?
Yeah. I mean, it was $115 million to implement security improvements.
Mm-hmm.
Either things were really bad or they just said, look, we've got to do something.
Yeah. Go out and spend a boatload of money. So we don't care on what it's on. Now, go get 4,000 new UTMs.
There again, you could have called me. I will take purchase orders up to that amount.
But it did also include, and I think this was one of the things that they were really pushing to get them to commit to, which might be why they dropped down to the $16 million, too, is the corrective action plan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that alone, I mean, you know, after hearing Memorial Hospital talk about how intense the corrective action plan is, they're like, it's one thing to write a check. It's another thing to do this stuff for 2 years.
Yeah. Just go away. Yeah.
But it's pretty intense because, and it's not a lot different than, you know, things we've covered. I think they give them a little bit more time because they're so huge. But the concept's the same in the corrective action plan, and they're not easy. So just a taste is 90 days of the effective date. So they got 90 days from, last week or recently. They got 90 days to provide a statement of work for the risk analysis that they need to do.
Okay.
So they got to send it to HHS in 90 days. Within 30 days, HHS will let them know what changes they believe they need to make to the statement of work.
Okay.
Then they set a deadline that they'll make those changes, and then HHS has 30 days, and they stay in this loop until HHS says, okay, that is an effective risk analysis.
Wow.
Yeah. Then they got to do it. So they get 210 days to send a report to Anthem, and it can be a final risk analysis, or it can be, this is how far we've gotten, or, you know, they got to send them a report. And at that point, guess what happens? Another loop. Let me take it for 30 days. I'm going to review it. I'm going to let you know what I think. And then you got 30 days to revise it. And the loop continues until HHS approves the risk analysis. So if in 210 days you're not done, every 30 days you're going to be getting more work to do or sending them another report. One of the things that, you know, you're going to be doing both. Not fun. I guess every 60 days you send them something and then they send you something and then 30, you know, it's back and forth. But that's a pretty intense process.
It might be why Anthem has job openings for compliance officers.
And then after it's approved, they have 150 days to incorporate any of the results into their security measures. Boom. So that's the security part of it. So this could go on for a year by the time you add all those days up, right? But they also have a separate part about policies and procedures. So they have 150 days from the settlement. So this is a totally separate project with its own deadlines.
Okay.
They submit a report where they review all their policies and procedures, noting where they need to make changes. And the OCR settlement said, you know, you got to make changes in minimum uses and disclosures, and, you know, certain things required it, but you could tell us more. Wink, wink. Tell us more and we'll be happier. And so then HHS will review it, let them know in 60 days how that plan flies, and, you know, that loop goes on. Then they have 45 days to revise all the policies and procedures they have noted and send them back for review. 45 days.
Not a whole lot.
You know, when you go through approvals and all that kind of stuff. But then guess what? You get in another loop. Because if HHS adds amendments to the policies and procedures, they have 90 days to implement those updates after the final approval. They have to make sure that all of the policies and procedures are accessible to the whole workforce within 30 days of the adoption of them. And here's a good one, is they have to make sure that new staff members have access to them within 30 days of employment. How many times you hear people say, ah, you know, training once a year, it's for everybody, including new employees.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, it's the same thing over and over. But, you know, none of this is odd for a kind of a corrective action plan. The only thing is just, you know, the sheer volume it will require for them to do it. But, you know, the other corrective action plan tricky thing is all those attestations and reports that they have to do. So if you've got all these cool policies and procedures, then Anthem gets a potential breach. So it's one patient, let's say. One person involved, one email account that's messed up, 300 people in a spreadsheet, doesn't matter what it is, they have to investigate. And if it could be a breach, even if it's less than 500, they have 60 days to report it to HHS. So they have to report to HHS in writing within 60 days if any workforce member failed to comply with policies and procedures and it's a breach. So that means you're, for the next 2 years, always on a 60-day clock. Yeah. And, you know, in these large environments, there's a huge number of single, you know, less than 500 breaches. That's like at the conference where they ask, why don't you have those listed too? And she's like, my guess is there's just so many. I mean, there's thousands over 500. So those attestations and those reports. Now, here's the tricky part. And this is what, you know, I wouldn't want to be in that position. It's required that an officer of the company attest to all of these things and that they've implemented updates to the policies and procedures as actually happening and that they attest that they actually reviewed it themselves. So whoever signs off is also saying, I have reviewed it and asked questions.
I wonder who would get voluntold to do that.
Well, there's only a limit. You know, it has to be an officer of the company. But, you know, that you actually review the stuff. How many times you hear, I need you to sign this. They don't even know what they're signing.
Yeah.
I know. So it's like, that goes out the window. So you're looking at a lot of time that's involved.
I'd be like, can I just pay you $32 million and you just go away?
Because they could probably start a check. It wouldn't matter to them that much. But overall, I think that's why, you know, they went down to the $16 million so they could get them locked in on that corrective action plan.
Right.
And here's the thing is, if at any time they fail doing the, you know, they can say, okay, all bets are off. We go back to the drawing table. We start over. And this time we get to charge you more money and have more rules. So it gets worse if you don't meet these requirements in the corrective action plan. That's the thing that people don't get. Mm. And I mean, I still think that whenever you see these settlements, and they do have corrective action plans that don't involve settlements and money settlements and big announcements, you know. Say, well, we want to see you do X, Y, and Z and send us that paperwork by this date proving it. So, yeah.
It's like that crazy ex-girlfriend you move in, you can't get rid of them.
That sounds like the voice of experience there, but I don't want to know any of that story. But or maybe you're married to her now. I don't know.
No, that was before. But,
that was the one before. The one before.
Yeah, talk about a corrective plan.
So the big thing, the big question is going to be, how much is this going to matter? You know, how much does it really matter? Because, you know, there's still so many people out there that are like, look, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing more. We're not going to worry about these things. We're too small. We don't have the money. You know, give me a million things. And we still have the, you know, the whole thing of my neighbor's son who's good with video games is managing our network.
Oh, yeah.
That's everywhere. Yep. And you don't have truly professional IT support. They can't keep up with all these things that are happening.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I hear it all the time coming from the IT side. You know, they'll tell you in one breath, you know, we've made a business decision that we can't afford to do that, you know, and then at the same time, they're running off 3 days a week playing golf. I'm like, you're paying more in golf fees than you'd be paying to have your network secured. It's just,
well, and that's the thing that really makes OCR mad. I can tell you, they dig into your finances and they want to know what you're spending money on. And if this money is basically frivolous compared to protecting your patients,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, they're gonna pay attention. So needless to say, there's a lot of people that should be paying attention. You know, there was a quote I saw, somebody said, this is, you know, the industry, this is a dire warning for the industry and everybody should pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at this point, I don't know when they will, if they haven't already, when it happens to them or somebody they know.
Yeah. Well, it's to the point now, not only do we have breach fatigue, but we also have, you know, like infection and malware fatigue. We hear all every week, especially if you're in IT, it's all the time. There's something in it for me because I care. It's like I get overwhelmed with it. Like, oh my gosh, all this stuff I got to do and people I got to protect. And, you know, even when I communicate that sometimes with some of the clients, they're like, well, we're not all that worried about it. And I'm like, you should be.
You don't understand.
Yeah, they're like,
well, you know, that's one of the things that I found that really gets, you know, a response from healthcare, you know, especially when you're dealing with clinicians and those kind of things, is I put up the AV test slide that says they find there's 812 something, it's more than that now, but, you know, a month or so ago when I did the slide, that's how much malware is out there, and they're saying they're getting about 350,000 new variants every day.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's a lot, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I turn around and I say, now, think that is how many new flu variants come out every day of the year, and all of those are aimed at your devices, not just your computers. They're aimed at your computers that make phone calls. They're aimed at your medical devices and your servers and everything. That's how many every day. How are you going to inoculate against that? Are you going to have enough antibiotics or antiviral medication to attack that.
Yeah. And for some of them, there's not an antidote yet.
Yeah, I know. There's nothing. You're going down. So it does help, though, to get them to see it in a different light, because then they're like, whoa, now, wait, you know. They, you know, I've seen people look down at their phones and kind of lay it down. Yeah. And you, all of a sudden, you got more germs than I thought you did.
Yeah. Yeah. The more we can get people to understand that the digital environment is no different than, you know, IRL.
In real life, for those of you who are not speaking
but when nerdish. When you start putting, I mean, when you start looking at it, it's the same thing. It's just, you know, it's the same but different. Right. It's the same but different.
It's the same but different. Yeah, it's just, it's that those things are bouncing around at such a speed and such a volume that it requires, you know, the humans can't comprehend it. Because it's so much faster and so much bigger, and you don't see it. You don't see the results of it.
You just have to go watch The Matrix and then come back and listen to this podcast.
Well, you know, just like we talked about, that's why the cyber, Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and I've talked in front of probably over 200 people in the last 2 weeks. And I said, you're here because it's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Not one person even knew what I was talking about. And I was like, clearly you got to do a better job of getting that word out.
I know. I mean, and for a lot of the IT community, they're doing a bad job of getting it out there too. This is kind of like our Christmas.
Well, it's like they said today, the security people are really good at talking to other security people about security things.
Yep.
But they're horrible at talking to anybody else about it where they can understand it.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely
right. It's on us. And you and I, we're doing our part.
Yeah.
Which is why we are here to help with HIPAA.
Well, you know, I heard one today, and I'm going to give it away because I was like, oh, I'm going to hold on to this one because it's great. But the lady was talking about the training and how everything you need to know about cybersecurity you were taught as a kid. And I was like, okay, I got to hear this one.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. It's awesome.
And she went into it. She's like, look, Little Red Riding Hood was nothing but somebody who fell for social engineering. The wolf figured out that grandma wasn't going to be home. And then she went and impersonated her and got, you know, got all the information, blah, blah, blah. You know,
that's how it works.
And then you take the three little pigs, right? You know, yeah. Some of them had better security than the others. And, you know, because they built a better infrastructure. And it's the same stuff. You know, what was it? The person sending you that phishing email is just a digital guy pulling up in a van with puppies trying to get you to get in.
Yeah. It's stranger danger.
Yes, it's the same stuff. Everybody understands how to do cybersecurity when you put it in the light of what they've already been taught.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I loved it when that whole thing about stranger danger, and we all know that one, you know?
I know.
So I'm going to start, maybe we'll put together a thing where you play the creepy guy trying to lure people.
Why do I have to play the creepy guy?
Because it's just so easy. You don't really have to work at it.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's enough for today. As I'm done, that was a good one for me.
Yep. I tell you. So the next time somebody pulls up in a creepy van and has some candy and says, come here, boy. It's the same thing that's happening in your inbox multiple times a day. And you're clicking right on it, too. Give me some candy.
I know. While we were doing that, we were just having our discussion about the podcast, the boot camp conference call. Krista's getting a smishing one.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is a SMS text message that came through trying to get her to go to a website.
Da, da, da.
Just click this link.
Yeah. Or list something on Craigslist and you'll get those a lot.
Oh, geez.
You can't even sell anything online anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's when you get a Google Voice number for those.
That's an idea.
I'm full of them. I'm full of a lot.
You're full of a lot. That's true. All right. All right, folks, that is our show for today. Thanks for listening. Remember, share it on your favorite social media site. If you don't have a favorite social media site, then just pick one. Make sure to rate our show on a podcasting app. I was trying to remember, where are you going to rate us at? Help us spread the word. I mean, you know, we're spreading other things. Why not spread the word?
Oh, good Lord. Move along, brother. Move along.
Don't forget to come back in a couple of weeks and we'll have the boot camp date, I'm sure, because, you know, so Donna will quit getting asked about it, I guess. So remember, for Donna and myself, that HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.